Hello, everyone. My name is Denisa Kostovicheva, and I'm an associate professor in global politics at the European Institute at the LSE. I'm absolutely delighted to welcome you to our discussion tonight about the role of arts in conflict and peace. This event is hosted by the LSE Ideas. This is LSE's foreign policy think tank, RATIU Forum, which is a joint initiative by the RATIU Family Charitable Foundation, the RATIU Democracy Center, and LSE Ideas, that tackles topical questions in the Balkan region, and the Justint Project, which is a five-year long project funded by the European Research Council that investigates how people address the legacy of wartime violence, which I direct at the European Institute at the LSE. This collaboration has allowed us to tackle the question of the role of arts in post-conflict societies in a rather innovative format. We will bring together into dialogue artists and academics, and we will also play five-minute clips from two exciting plays. These plays are a part of the new drama podcast series, Out of the Woods, New Plays from the Balkans. The series was produced by British Bosnian writer Miran Hadžić with support from theatre company Tamasha and Kosovan UK company Intent New Theatre with the funding from the Arts Council England. I also would like to note at this point that this event is recorded and it will be made into a podcast which will be available on the website of the LSE Ideas. So what I'll do first is I'll introduce our speakers tonight, and then I'll just sort of address a few questions that we will be sort of mulling over tonight. So I'm very glad to introduce first Ulpiana Maljoku. Ulpiana is a playwright and dramaturg from Kosovo, and her work has already attracted acclaim, and we will play a clip from her new, or rather say latest play, Nude. Agnesa Mehanoli is a playwright and coordinator for New Intent Theatre in Kosovo, and we will hear 5 minutes of her first play, Where is Mr. President? This play premiered at the Refugee Week in June this year, and is also part of Out of the Woods drama podcast series. We also have with us Finn Kennedy. Finn is an award-winning playwright and an outgoing artistic director of theatre company Tamasha, that supports talent from the global community worldwide. And also with us is Ivor Sokolic. Ivor is lecturer in politics and international relations at the University of Hampshire. He's also a research fellow with the Justint Project. Ivor specializes in the study of post-conflict transitional justice and is the author of the recently published monograph, International Courts and Mass Atrocity. So just before I hand over to Ulpiana, I would just like to address the question why we should discuss the power of arts in peace and justice. And certainly from a scholarly perspective, kind of where we sit, we are seeing a very interesting development, and that is that art and artistic intervention is currently at the forefront of international intervention in post-conflict societies. As we have seen in different contexts, transitions from war to peace are difficult. They throw up many challenges, and they often result in weak, poorly governed, and ethnically divided states. At the same time, these societies, these contexts spur creativity. Different forms of arts thrive in post-conflict spaces. And the reason why art and artistic intervention is attracting so much attention is that artists are being able to raise questions which others are not able to do. So the artists have asked difficult questions about transitional justice, about local power holders, about cultural mores. But while art plays a central role in post-conflict reconstruction, there is a lot about the power of art that we really need to understand much better. So I think some questions that are motivating our discussions tonight is how does art, or how can an artist manage to engage the people when other sort of conventional approaches have failed? What is the power of art as social and political critique, but also what are its limits? And lastly, do art and artists risk being co-opted for political ends, especially now when practitioners are turning to artists? These are just few questions that I just, you know, for to let us kind of think in the background, and I'm sure there will be many more that will come up as we proceed tonight. So what I'll do first, I'll invite Ulpiana Malioku to introduce her play. And after her introduction, we will play a 5-minute clip.
Yeah, thank you. Hi to all. It's a pleasure for me to be here with you all tonight. You're going to be hearing my audio play produced by Tamasha and also a collaboration with Intan New Theater. This is a play that it's called Nude, and it was really a great journey till the end of making this happen. And I'm really, really glad that you're going to be here a little bit of that play tonight, even though it's not all, but I think from these 5 minutes, you're going to hear something that may intrigue you also for the topic of tonight's gathering. And I think that with Nude, I also wanted to tell something or to show to people what art really can make, what changes can art make. Also, this play is more about these two middle-aged women who go to an exhibition, and they really are surprised by what they see there. So I'm not gonna spoil it that much to you, but I think that doing art and doing it in a way to make a change and to show something that can be really productive and to make people think, and also societies think more about changes that need to be done, because we live in a crazy world nowadays. And I think doing it by these forms of art is really something that may intrigue people to do steps or smaller steps to those changes. So I'm really looking forward to your reactions and to see if you like the play. And now I think we're going to play the first 5 minutes of this audio play, Nude, and you'll find the link in the audience chat, I guess. And if you have any question after that, feel free.
Okay, so I hope you were intrigued to hear more of what happens. But now we move on to Agnesa, and I'll ask Agnesa's play, Agnesa, to introduce her play.
hello, good evening. Can you hear me? Okay, I'm very happy to be here amongst you. My name is Agnesa, I'm from Kosovo, and I wrote this play, and it was the first one being finalized for me to the point of being recorded and everything. It's called Where is Mr. President? It was inspired by Orson Welles, The War of the Worlds. I tried to imitate somehow his style of the storytelling, including the news reporters and the radio and everything. So it's about, I think it's fair to call it a political satire, even if I did not intend it to be as such. It's about a utopian world where things kind of change when the leader of our country disappears. So I hope you enjoy it. its intention is to be funny and make people laugh, even when there's not really much to laugh about, especially about the way our leaders do their work in our countries. Thank you.
Okay. Again, I hope you're intrigued to find out what happened to Mr. President. But now I will hand over to Finn Kennedy, who will talk to us as from the perspective of arts as an artist.
Hello, thank you, Denisa. Hi, everyone. I'm Finn Kennedy, Artistic Director of Touring Theatre Company Tamasha, who was one of the producers behind these podcasts. I'm also a writer. I've written about Kosovo, and I'm co-creator and dramaturg of the Out of the Woods series. By way of introduction, I wanted to start with an anecdote. In the tech rehearsal for tonight's event a few days ago, the writers were asked to say a little something to you, our audience, to introduce their plays, as they've just done. Agnesa, I hope you won't mind me saying this, looked a little bit anxious and asked if in her introduction she had to reference or reflect on the role of arts and culture in post-conflict societies, the rather grand title of our gathering tonight. Mary and I reassured her that no, just some thoughts about the play would be fine, which you so eloquently did. However, this moment stayed with me. It reminded me of something which happened early in my career. Almost 20 years ago, I had my first play on at Soho Theatre, which was about social workers. My mum was a social worker. Hi, mum. Some kind of care home scandal was in the national news, and I was asked to go on a live current affairs BBC news panel with the then Minister of State for Children. I balked. I wasn't some kind of expert. I'd only written a play in it. So I'm sorry to have to break it to you, but writers are not really experts in anything other than what makes a good story. We take what we need from the world around us to make those stories, but we only need as much knowledge as it takes to convincingly animate those characters. So I felt Agnes's pain when I saw that look on her face. For us, it's only ever about that story, in that moment. Those bigger issues hover above us. But it got me thinking, in anticipation of this evening, to what extent is it fair to expect writers, artists, culture makers to use what they do to heal their societies, especially after a period of conflict? A thriving and diverse art scene is usually a sign of a healthy overall democratic culture, but can you turn that equation around and seek to instill or encourage a healthier national conversation by strategically installing arts projects in weak or corrupt states? I don't have the answers to that. And there are people on the panel tonight who are a lot more informed and experienced in these things than me. But as a storyteller, I'll offer a short tale. 6 years ago, I was approached by BBC Radio 4 to script some audio dramas in response to some unreleased songs by singer-songwriter PJ Harvey, inspired by her travels in Kosovo. I recruited a Kosovan cultural consultant and local partner in Tent New Theatre and had two fascinating visits to the country hosted by them. One thing I was struck by was how little most people mention the war at all. Then I went away and wrote a 5-part series all about it. In harrowing detail, which was broadcast on Radio 4 in 2017. Now, in fairness to my plays, I was following PJ Harvey's lead with her tear-stained songs, but I did end up giving my fee away. Or rather, I wrote the plays on salary for Tamasha and arranged for the company to receive the fee to be ring-fenced for an ongoing international exchange of some kind with Kosovo and its writers. It was partly that I didn't feel it was right to make money out of writing about someone else's war trauma. But it was also that I was so struck when I was out there by the high standard of creative talent in Kosovo and the very low level of opportunities afforded to that talent, and wanted to do something about it to help introduce it to the world. Which, long story short, is what led to tonight. Along the way, I had some fantastic allies, my colleagues at Tamasha, especially Debo Adebayo, Mary, Emily, Sophia in Tent, Kushtrim and Fiola, of course, in Kosovo itself. And of course, Miran Hadjic, who has really bloomed as a producer as well as a writer on this project. It's notable that my own Kosovan-inspired play was about the war, but the three pieces which make up Out of the Woods make no mention of it. Indeed, some are actual comedies. Imagine that, Kosovan comedy. It's actually quite nice to say. To me, some plays by an outsider like me about a war, giving birth to some plays by its residents, not about the war, is a marker of success because it changes the narrative. I believe stories can change the world. I believe that stories fundamentally shape how we view ourselves, view others, view the world and its possibilities. In fact, I'd go so far as to say stories don't just change the world, they are the world, at least to us, human beings, because human beings are the only storytelling animal and it runs throughout everything we do. Take politics, for example. It's just a load of stories. Who we are, how we got here, why things are how they are and what needs to change. Religion, just a load of stories. History, just a load of stories. Commerce, branding, stories. Journalism, they're all chasing the story. Education, just a load of stories. In fact, note how much information is packaged as stories throughout our school years. That's a clue as to how powerful stories are as a way of passing on and storing important information about the world, therefore shaping how we see it. We are the storytelling animal. And so stories can change the world because they can change us. There's a dark side to this, of course. At its milder end, it's advertising companies and clickbait tapping into our susceptibility to stories to influence our behaviour to sell us stuff. And at its darker end, it's far-right narratives about them and us, totalitarian states and herding citizens into groups, or worse. This is because human beings are biological organisms hardwired to respond physically and emotionally to stories. It's in our evolution and therefore our DNA. And because they touch something so deeply in us, stories can be deployed for good or for evil. So to return to my original question, to what extent should artists, storytellers be expected to use what they do to heal their societies? I'd say actually as little as possible, because to set out with that as the main aim would be incredibly irritating and undoubtedly result in bad art. I recall some young Kosovans once complaining to me about NGO type initiatives such as touring an orchestra made up of young musicians from all the Balkans nations, which they saw as inherently patronising. But I'd also say that's the wrong question to ask. A better one would be, how can societies improve the stories they tell about themselves by using their artists? I'm lucky never to have lived through a war, but I would imagine in the immediate aftermath, there is a total absence of stories until the physical functioning of society starts to return. The question then becomes, what is the nature and quality of the stories around which we are going to rebuild our society? And of course, those stories don't have to mention the war at all to help that society recover. Stories are as much about the future as the past. To be telling them at all is the point. I'll end with another small story from a previous Q&A with Agnesa. She pointed out something I had said in the Out of the Woods press release about supporting our writers just to be artists, to write about whatever they want, unburdened by the past, just like their artist peers across Europe. And that's what we're aiming for. Just by having a thriving story culture at all, you are rebuilding your society. Stories are where we encounter each other and a language we all have in common. And that's why they're powerful. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Finn. This is thought-provoking, and I think Ivor's contribution will put it into perspective from sort of the other sort of policy end where these very important questions are coming from.
Thank you, Denisa. Just listening, obviously, to the plays, which I would really encourage people to listen to the whole play, because there are twists and turns in there as well that are really incredible. So I'd really encourage people to get to the end. Finn was bringing up really brilliant points. I almost feel like we could start a discussion already here. This notion of stories, and of course, I agree completely. Even in political science, we talk about narratives that build identities. In the aftermath of conflict, it's not just that there are no stories, it's more like there are these sort of single narratives of conflict that perpetuate the conflict over and over again, built around these sort of monolithic identities of the other and the other that is a threat. And certainly something I'm going to talk about is this notion of how art can challenge that or even just provide more narratives, like you said, sort of more stories, often in a very implicit way, which is why it's brilliant when we see plays that are not directly dealing with the conflict, but they're actually showing these other struggles that are happening in society. So I guess to take it back to this problem we have in policy when it comes to peace building and related areas such as reconciliation or transitional justice, there is this focus on top-down processes from these big institutions or from international NGOs. And there's a focus on institutional actors. And these are often rejected by local publics. And Finn already had some anecdotes of how that had happened in one level. And for a long time, actually, there has been a debate and an argument going on in with policymakers that to foster meaningful change, policy ought to be more firmly anchored in locally in communities, and be linked to some kind of future-oriented transformative agenda. But what this might look like remains undecided. So we don't really know what efforts like this might look like. And increasingly, researchers and policymakers are considering art as one of these avenues that can be much more context specific. So art is imbued with this transformative potential since it can show these sort of plural and locally driven narratives. So again, stories that can reach across conflict lines, and they can foster this sort of shared emotional response or even empathy between individuals. So why is this? Well, art can challenge a lot of the programmatic thinking from the top that has been a problem in peace building. So this notion of identities being quite monolithic based on the conflict. And also art challenges these oversimplified models of conflict and identity that you can only identify with your ethnicity, and this ethnicity is born out of conflict, and so on. A lot of these outcomes of the arts are implicit rather than explicit. The arts don't aim to have this outcome. It's simply something that happens along the way. So the arts can provide a structure and a space that invite people to sort of encounter things where also stuff can sort of start to emerge naturally if people are interested and engaged, and it can actually kind of raise interest. In community settings where this rhetoric of peace and reconciliation is generally distrusted, an explicit agenda around this often alienates people. So art can actually bring people to talk about these issues through a different avenue without being explicit about it. So in some ways, we can talk almost about peace building often as a byproduct of the arts rather than an explicit aim. And also art can really be transformative because it can take into account the lived experience of locals properly. And also sort of their inevitable need to survive, to rebuild, to locate their individual voices, individual stories, as well as their collective voices and stories. And also sort of make and negotiate meaning in the context of violence. So we have some colleagues at King's College and at the University of the Arts who Denise and I worked with for a number of years. So Dr. Tiffany Ferry and Professor Rachel Kerr, and they've been studying this a lot. And I just wanted to kind of highlight five mechanisms that they identify. In other words, five ways that they believe art can be transformative in this way. And I'll just make brief examples to the two plays because I really think they were great examples of these sort of theoretical frameworks that we are beginning to develop now. So art can show a personal dimension of the conflict, allowing for individual responses to complex issues. And we actually see this in both plays, these sort of personal interpretations of really complex topics, such as, for example, societal norms of behavior, or even nationhood and state building is touched upon. And most of all, they're different interpretations of periods of change. And that's what these sort of transitional societies have in common, that they're periods of significant change. Art remembers and pays testimony to the past. And in many ways, Where is Mr. President is a brilliant perspective on political upheaval. I found, you know, it was funny, but it was so serious. And you could really see this actually happening in almost in any society in the world. It's basically universal. I mean, you can imagine this, like I said, in any community. Art pays attention to things that might otherwise go unnoticed and unseen. So here I was struck by nude, which sort of delves into how or rather what happens in the home behind closed doors and how this might be different to what societal norms prescribe, which is brilliant because this is often what we find in post-conflict societies, is that what happens behind closed doors is very different to what the societal norms usually prescribe. Art has a transformative potential, not only in terms of material objects, but also perceptions. And again, here I want to focus on this notion that both plays provide novel perspectives on periods of change, of upheaval. And finally, because to a certain extent, because of everything I've already mentioned, art is empathetic and it enables this shared emotional response that can bring people together. So these are plays one can relate to, and one can relate to it regardless of their background. So in contexts where almost everything is defined by identity and belonging to a certain group, these plays show how shared experiences are actually shared across these dividing lines. So in many ways, these plays are an antidote to the often criticized sort of top-down approaches that we see in peace building. I'll highlight a problem here, maybe worth discussing. In the realities of sort of modern day, often donor-driven peace building, we also sort of need to see how they can be better evaluated, because unfortunately, more funding is often linked to impact, and it can be hard to actually gauge the impact of the arts in order to receive more funding. So really evaluation becomes crucial. And I actually believe the work that I just outlined by Dr. Tiffany Ferry and Professor Rachel Kerr actually is a step in that direction towards a framework of evaluation that we can then use to further nurture the arts, to provide more funding, more support, and more space, and hopefully continue essentially building the arts in post-conflict societies. So I'll leave it to the others to respond to that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Igor. So we are starting our Q&A part of the session. As you've seen in the chat, please write your questions using the Q&A function. But while we eagerly await them, I just wanted to ask any of the panelists if they would like to respond to anything that has been said. Agnesa, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I would like to somehow continue what Finn said. I think it's very important for any writer. When he or she starts to write something, it doesn't have to have in his mind, in his head, the opinion that we have a mission and through our writings we should correct things or whatever. So I think, yeah, when I started writing Where's Mr. President, I actually tried to somehow escape the reality, the problems in my country at that time. But somehow every problem got through and made me write about it. What I want to say is that my country, Kosovo, it's been 20 years and more since the war. It has so much problem, so many topics that we can talk about, that we can create art with. I would like to do something about it at the future. I wouldn't like myself to be disconnected with that part and just create art for the sake of art or for my enjoyment. I just think that is right now is not the right time for me to, I don't think I'm mature enough to do something, to make a writing that's serious enough and could express in the right way everything that my country went through before. I hope I was clear. So yeah, what I'm trying to say is that I would like every artist to write what they want. What our soul want to express. But we also, myself personally, or I believe in every post-conflict society, every artist has in mind that it should, hasn't, because it has in its DNA that he should do a part of it in the history of making changes. If I wasn't understandable.
Thank you, Agnes. It was very, very understandable. I wanted to make actually one remark, and this is very much prompted by what Finn said, and also sort of me reflecting also on the plays, which I very much enjoyed. And I just thought they were very deep and layered, and you could read them from many different sort of perspectives. But something that very much struck me was this, you know, Finn, when you mentioned, so there is this idea, this longing for normality. Okay. And I also almost felt that this longing for normality, right, doing, you know, let's live as, you know, young people do anywhere else in Europe, you know, I thought that that is also the reflection of very much of this kind of exactly what Agnesa was saying. So there is just no escape, right, for the circumstances in which you are, right, which have been so profoundly molded by conflict, you know, and of course for young people, the conflict that happened even before they were born. So I actually found that almost poignant and almost somehow in a way painful, right? But that, you know, you want to act normal, right? And that sort of quest for normality is just so strong and so keenly felt in these post-conflict societies. You know, to be honest with you, I've rarely spoken with an artist in the, you know, in the UK, let's say, for example, here, where somebody would say, I just want to write about things, about normal things, right? Almost artists seem reacting against normal, right? Trying to make a case that, you know, my work is my work, but it is also about things that I want to change, right? And that is almost the defining sense of their identity. And I think here is the, you know, you can see the contrast between post-conflict and sort of, you know, developed democracies, which are not without their problems, of course. Ulpiana, yes, go ahead. Yes.
Thank you, Denisa. Also, I want to relate to your last word, because I lost my father in the war of Kosovo. He was killed, and always people used to ask me, why don't you write your own story or your father's story? Or even my colleagues that are writers, they told me that. And I actually thought that if I do that, I'm not going to change anything because that's already happened. And maybe what I'm going to cause, it's more sadness in a way, because it's a story that you cannot bring comedy or satire to it, you know, and that's why I choose to always write something else, which also my, as a person, I'm more, you know, funny, and I like more things to joke about. And in that way, I want to change things that are bothering me now, because the story is the story and we cannot change it. So if we write and we focus on things that we are actually dealing with every day, I think that's my focus and my main point of view as I see this, you know, talent that I got, you know, to try and to focus to change those things. So I think that peace can be built also by keeping the history, but thinking towards the future. So that's my opinion about it.
Thank you, Juliana. We have some questions from our attendees. So let's take them in turn. So Chite Fido, excuse if the pronunciation is not correct, asked three sets of questions, and asking about an interesting point. What is the reaction of people in your context in Kosovo to your work? Then there is a question: to what ways do you think it reflects life and experiences in your country, and what sort of resonates most with people who listen to your plays? And this is for Agnesa and Ulpiana. How do people receive your work at home?
If I may answer.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, actually I had some feedbacks that were really positive, and also from those middle-aged women that found themselves in my radio play, they were somehow questioning what would they do if they were in the position of Nazmiye somehow. And that actually, I was glad by that because I saw that they started to kind of think and get intrigued by the story. But overall, I think that the feedback was positive, and I think it's, even if I can say that it's a change, I'm not, you know, exaggerating it, but just those reactions make me think that is a positive change somehow, or it may lead to a positive change. So
thank you. Agnesa, did you maybe want to address these questions?
I think the way that external actors helped in my play was very powerful. I think the way this whole collaboration between London actors, between English actors, and me as a Kosovo writers, even though there were some Albanian writers from there in London, I think it brought a very positive outcome. It really helped even locals here. I mean, some of the people that gave me positive feedback to take it more seriously and kind of believe that if I try to write a comedy, even though there's not much to be laughed at, since it's a reflection of the reality, it's actually, it's a nice try to try and at least change a little bit the mood of the people. If it's not going to change something much bigger, it can be a small change for a day or something.
We have another really interesting question, which is about the creative process. And maybe here, I think probably more information would be helpful on did you write this these plays in Albanian, and then were they translated? This is Lucy Hannah asked the question. Maybe just to tell us a little bit more about that.
Actually, it was all in English, since our mentor was Finn and we discussed everything with them. And the whole process was in English. And translating them into Albanian is another process we're walking through right now. But no, at first it was in English.
Okay, so basically here was the question about the creative process, how it would have been different, whether, you know, if you had written it in Albanian in your mother tongue.
Actually, the actors were very, I'm very grateful for them. They did talk with the right tone in every scene. And I know that the languages are not the same, and we have some sayings here that does not translate equally in English or otherwise. But yeah, it did work out very well, I think. Yeah. I'm very pleased with that, with the whole process and the work of the actors and actresses.
Thank you, Agnesa. Would Ivor and Orfin like to step in here and say anything?
I wanted to say a bit about how we got these funded and recorded, because they were sort of, it was quite organic really, and developed over a number of years, starting with that Radio 4 commission that I mentioned. It was Miran Hadžić, actually, who's a British Bosnian writer, who's, I think, in the audience tonight. Hi, Miran. Who came through our writers program at Tamasha, which is we have 10 writers on attachment every year who get weekly sessions in our office, and we train them as producers as much as writers, and kind of how to, you know, survive within the industry. Anyway, all of that came good. And when we brought him on board for this, I was busy having my second baby. And so he covered for me to go on a return visit to Kosovo with my colleague at Tamasha, Debo Adebayo. Anyway, one thing led to another. We commissioned him to write his own piece in response to that trip. And then it kind of languished for a while because we sort of ran out of money, basically. But then Miran went and raised a chunk from Arts Council project grants, which independent artists can apply to, which is what we made these first three with. And so we made them in London with Albanian, but British London-based Albanian actors, or of Albanian heritage, Kosovan in some cases, actually, as well. Mostly for cost reasons, really. It was, you know, it's much more expensive to make things abroad and fly back and forth, and do you know what I mean? But we are, in fact, I'll dig out a link. There's a, or Mary, maybe you can. There's a fundraiser for, to a crowdfunder to translate these into Albanian and to record them, re-record them locally on the ground. So it's really important that this work is kind of locally owned and led. And it's the measure of its success, really, is how far it has a life beyond the kind of any international actors who helped kick it off. So yeah, that's I hope some useful background.
Absolutely. Well, I think that really ties in neatly to the next question that we have, and that is this idea of integration of arts into peace building, which is more addressed to Ivor. Which I think kind of really sort of provides a sort of a rather sort of an opposite way of intervening and using arts, right? I think it was really nice that in your when you spoke, Finn, you spoke about going to Kosovo and then writing the plays and actually wanting to return to that society and then supporting the artists from Kosovo. Whereas what we are seeing at the policy level is something completely different, right? It is basically integration of the arts into the peace building, sort of different peace building approaches. So here the question is, for Ivor, is there a risk of creating another elite among artists by making them agents of peace building, given obviously the record of peace building interventions that we have that result is kind of adverse unintended effects?
Yeah, that's like, gosh, that's a tough question. Because yeah, a lot of our interventions are relatively naive at the outset in many ways, and certainly have been in the past. To a certain extent, it's not just a problem for the arts. It's a problem generally for donors, for example, to know what, you know, where money should be going, where should it potentially be staying repeatedly, how much to send to, you know, one organization rather than other organizations. And what we've seen in other sectors is there are actors who become very good at attracting international funding, and they'll just adapt their sort of mission statement to whatever gets them the funding. So they're not actually pursuing the goals that they were supposed to be pursuing. They're just getting more funding and that way providing, you know, potentially jobs for the organization. Of course, if money is involved, there will be some kind of power relationship. It's almost unavoidable. And that could lead to certain inequalities and certainly to more friction in society. I guess the hope I would have for art, for one, what I found fascinating about these plays, and I remember actually previously when we spoke about this, when we were also speaking to Miran, is the low barrier to entry for an audio play. It doesn't take a lot of money to create it. Of course, it takes money, but not a lot of money. So actually, in some ways, it can be more democratic and broader because you can actually enable more people to participate in this practice. And also, a lot of what art does is almost organic. I found it really fascinating listening to Finn now talk about this and how there were all these positive outcomes that came out of it. And actually, it was I was caught, you know, I sort of thought, you mentioned this point where Miran, you know, you kind of ran out of funding and Miran had to find more funding. And I thought, well, that's the moment where if there was a bit more funding, this organic growth would be allowed to gather pace. So we can actually identify small moments where this is already sort of starting to happen and you just need a bit more money to keep it going rather than for at that point to have to struggle. And hopefully that's not a point where you're starting to create big inequalities by, you know, big actors coming in and essentially dumping a load of money onto just a small number of organizations who will run this centrally. So I do think there's hope for art in that sense because the barrier to entry can be much lower.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And of course, I think this is a I think this is a very big, big dilemma because, you know, there isn't a lot of money in the state coffers in Kosovo to go to support art, and this is a sort of, basically, this, you know, whether you want it or not, obvious ways to look at to fund even the smallest arts projects would be to look to sources for external funding, right? And here we kind of end up with a situation then, of course, that external funding then kind of has its own risks. So I think that again ties very neatly with the next question that we have for Agnesa and Ulpiana. It's a question to how they feel about the role of international actors, right? Do Kosovan artists believe that there is a positive role for external actors helping to bring about positive change in the society?
Actually, I think I just responded to that one before. I thought that was a question when you asked. So yeah, I can repeat it and say that, yeah, it was taken very seriously and everything was very liked from the audience. There was no barrier or problem seeing other actors interpreting something ours.
Ulpiana, how about, you know, what is your sort of perspective on this as an artist? With your experience, who do you look to support, or kind of, you know, what's the road ahead, you know, for example, for you, like, and for your colleagues?
Well, I think that external actors somehow make the story more serious if we're talking from the perspective of people that live in Kosovo, or even artists, when they hear that you're working with a production that is not from Kosovo, they start to take you more seriously somehow. And that is sad because, you know, we've been there and we've been working there, but possibilities are really low. And a lot of artists like Finn said, actually are good artists, and that's somehow more difficult to try and find your path. And when a possibility like this for me and Agnesa comes, of course that is a great help also for us to be somehow known in the way that we work, and our work to speak by itself, even in Kosovo, you know. So I think that is a great help in this perspective of seeing this, like, yeah.
Okay, thank you so much. There is actually one more question which is rather interesting, and that comes to, it's about stories and keeping stories alive. So Lucy Hannah is asking, how do we keep stories alive in areas of conflict where freedom of expression is challenged? I think this is for the whole panel. Hank, Finn.
Audio drama is my simple answer. You touched on it earlier, Denisa, but you're right. It's really good value for money, especially compared to film and even theatre, actually. And it's permanent. And as I'm finding, I'm also interested in geolocation technology and attaching to place-based audio drama. And when you do it that way around, it lives in the cloud. So you get around freedom of expression quite easily. And I think the possibilities of that are really exciting.
Thank you. Ivor?
Yeah, so fascinating you say that, Finn. And it's a brilliant question. And my worry is almost not about freedom of expression as such, because a lot of these societies are nominally quite open. because when freedom of expression is limited, it might be that art resists and is a form of dissent. Whereas in a lot of these societies, actually, we find that there is freedom of expression, but it's normatively often prohibited. And also for what Finn said in terms of geolocation, my worry here is segregation in post-conflict societies. It's actually almost physically difficult to walk to the other side, to where the others live. And it's becoming, in most of these societies, increasingly more difficult. So I think in some ways, it's potentially reducing these barriers that form the segregation to sort of allow for some kind of contact, to be able to, you know, potentially, you know, see this art, to potentially create it together. And certainly what Finn said is that if it lives on forever, I think that's really powerful. Yeah. And also, you know, things like YouTube, social media, they do also allow for the arts to reach this broader audience. And that is one way I think that they can live on. And that's where I believe the brilliance of sort of this sort of low barrier to entry forms of art can really work in these contexts.
Agnesa, please.
I would like just to add that I'm grateful for the situation here in my country. It's not that I can say that Kosovo is the right example of prohibited expression. I think we have quite some space to express ourselves in very, very much ways. I mean, I even wrote about how a dog can be better than a president in being a leader of our country. And in the future, we are planning to, I don't know, to collaborate with some radio or something, and the whole country will listen to it. So I don't have really a professional opinion, but I just thought it would be important to express that things aren't that worse than bad in my country.
Thank you, Agnesa. Ulpiana.
Yeah, well, if we talk about political issues, I'm not actually good at it, but I would say that as long as we from Kosovo, we don't have the chance to travel, I think that art can do that. So this is the most thing that, this is the only thing that I'm grateful for, because my piece actually had the way to London and there also to this meeting, and also a lot of people from different countries are hearing it. So that for me, it's really satisfying. And also, I don't see it as my country, like Agnesa said, as a country that doesn't allow you to write what you think and what you feel and what you want. And that's why I'm willing to somehow use this for, yeah. So.
Thank you, Ulpiana. I think we're at the point where we're just kind of have the last sort of rounds of comments from the panel. Anything kind of that sort of, you know, sort of excited you to think about differently through this conversation? I just thought, you know, at the start, it was very interesting how probably kind of a different perspectives, you know, when you come from the policy science perspective, and arts, how kind of far apart it looks at the first instance. But actually, if things are done right, and this is, I think, what we, as when we study politics and international relations, we do that in mind to make things better, right? We can come up with the criticism of these interventions, but also recognize that they have a role to play, especially to support art where the state either can't support them or won't support them. I mean, this is. I'm speaking beyond Kosovo as well. So I thought it would be kind of nice just to have kind of a one last round of comments and then wrap up the event.
I just wanted to say thank you to everyone involved in making these, because it was a proper team effort over many years, and with no promise of success at the start of it, and the writers in particular took a real leap of faith in investing their time in it. What I wanted to achieve, I suppose, is that this is just a series one. The reason we called it Out of the Woods, New Place from the Balkans and not from Kosovo is because we wanted to, in future, a podcast brand that would be able to accommodate different stories from different parts of the region. And I hope it will do that. I mean, it's all funding dependent. We've spent the latest lot, so we need to raise some more. But events like this really help get it out there into the world. So if you enjoy these, please do recommend them to people and give us a star rating on the podcast charts or whatever it's called. I don't really understand all that, but it's important. Help us make some more, because like I said, I want to sort of, this model is a platform which ought to be locally owned and led, and I really hope it will be in time. But that will continue to take a little bit more of a team effort. But thank you if you're in a position to help.
Thanks, Ben. Ivor, would you like to come in now? And then we'll just leave last comments for the artists.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for allowing me to sort of, you know, examine this and speak of the event, because this is really brilliant stuff, and Meet on Display as well, which is really worth listening to. What I guess my concluding comment would be, what I find fascinating here is listening to how the project came to be, or the various projects came to be. And when we study these conflicts, we often talk about how they're being analyzed in isolation from each other, but really it was a regional conflict where there were sort of ties across borders. And now when we're looking at this project that is sort of organically growing, we immediately see how you're reaching across different borders to actually, look at the arts and build arts projects that aren't focused on peace building, yet we're finding these connections. And it's once again become regional, which to me is fascinating and just a really, really brilliant work. So thank you very much.
Agnesa and Ulpiana.
Yeah, I also want to thank again Tamasha and Intan New Theatre for making this place till the final step. And also thank you for tonight. It was really a pleasure for me. And also I want to say that use conflict only in plays, because that's the things that we were taught to in our school. So not anywhere else. So yeah. Thank you.
Thank you from me too for allowing me to be part of this panel. Hope you enjoyed the talk. Sorry for my melodic English. And I really hope you enjoyed the radio dramas. I think they're worth to give it a shot. Good night.
Thank you, Agnesa. So I would like to thank our audience out there. We can't see you, but we appreciate your sort of tuning in and contributing with questions. Do listen to the plays. They're really easy to find. Just Google and they will pop up, and very easy to sort of hear them anytime. And I was very personally very excited about the prospect of engaging in this dialogue, delighted to hear the plays, and will very much look forward to the sort of next stage in the project. And I wish you sort of best of luck with getting more funding for engaging other sort of emerging authors from the region. And this, again, just to remind that this whole discussion will be available as a podcast, and we will further sort of disseminate the information. And have a nice evening, and hope to meet in a sort of similar format, possibly live, for the continuation of the project.